see the road master. So no, it's all gone.
Okay, good evening, everybody. We continue our next segment and building up our Bible IQ, Parshas Vayetze. This should be the sixth class, I think. And we've, again, just to recap, we started in Parshas Bereishis, and Noach is discussing how if we don't work on our midos, we're not able to do any of the mitzvos. They become very difficult for us. We discussed in Parshas Lech Lecha how to develop a Yiddish cup, how to develop the understanding that we can't rely on our understanding, and therefore we have to understand from what Hashem understands. That's what Avram brought to us. Then Vayera and Chayesar were the two parts of, Chayesara and Toldos. That was right. Vayera and Chayesar doing the two parts of Avram's Chesed, the divine Chesed, what that was. And Toldos was Yitzchak's divine Gvura. So now we're going to move on to Yaakov, and we're going to start with a number of questions, and some of these things we've talked about in the past, but we're putting it all together in one unified thread over here. So we'll start with all the questions over here, and a little bit, obviously, we'll tie into last week's Parsha. Since last week we focused on Yitzchak, now the focus is going to be on Yaakov. And we'll go on. This week is part one, and God willing, next week is part two. So this week is like laying down the foundation, like we did the same thing with Avram laying down the foundation. So at the birth of Yaakov, it says, "Va'achrechein yotza achi v'yada ocheses ba'kev Esav." And afterwards came out his brother, and his hand was holding on to the heel of Esav. Ayikrishmo Yaakov, and therefore they named his name Yaakov. And the famous question that is asked is, why do you call him Yaakov just because of the circumstances of Yaakov's position during the childbirth? The fact that he's holding on to the heel is no reason to call him heel, as that's what Yaakov is from the word Akev. So that's one general question we're going to look at. In this week's Parsha, when Yaakov runs away and he's going to Laban's house, so he stops along the way, and he takes a number of stones and puts them around his head. He has the dream of the ladder. And when it says he took the stones of the place, but later on the Torah refers to just one stone that he had put under his bed. So the Torah is teaching us that really he had a whole bunch of stones, and he wanted to lie around those stones. And each of the stones was disputing with the other stones that they wanted Yaakov to put his head upon that stone and not on the other stone. And then Hashem miraculously made all the stones into one stone. That was a miracle that Hashem did. So the question is, what was the significance of that miracle of putting all the stones into being one stone? Okay. Next thing we want to look into is the famous dream of the ladder. Vayachalom, Yaakov had a dream, v'nei sula mutzav arza, and behold, a ladder was, that its feet was on the ground, v'rosho magia shamayim, and the head was reaching the heavens, v'nei malachei elokim olim v'yordimbo, and there are angels going up and down from that ladder. And the entire prophecy in which Hashem spoke to Yaakov in that dream. And again, what is the significance of the dream of the ladder? Okay. After he has the dream of the ladder, then he makes a promise, the various vows that he makes, and now he moves on to Haran. So he comes to Haran, he notices three flocks that are waiting for more groups to come. And as he discusses with them, and then he sees that Rachel is coming, the Torah and these shepherds were explaining that we can't do anything because we have this large rock over the well. We have to wait for more people to come to remove the rock from the well. And as soon as Rachel comes, so by the Torah's writing a lot of verbs one after the other, Vayigash Yaakov, Vayogel, and Yaakov approached the well, and he removed the rock. So by the speed in which the Psukim seem to say he did it, so Rashi points out from the Medrash, He rolled it off as easily as someone rolls a stopper off the mouth of a bottle. He did it very easily. And now comes the next line, to tell us that his was very strong. And again, why does the Torah have to mention Yaakov's strength by removing the rock so easily? Why is the Torah informing us about this? Probably a very big question is, you know, usually when you do what's right, things usually turn out right for you. By Yaakov, we see it's not so. Yaakov in last week's parsha was minding his own business, studying Torah, and his mother tells him to go and take the bracha away from Esav. And Yaakov's very reluctant to do this. Yet his mother insists upon it. He does exactly as he's told. Well, it seems from that moment on, for nearly the rest of his life, it's just one terrible event after another. By taking the brachas, it causes Esav to hate him. Esav wants to kill him. Yaakov has to leave home. When he leaves home, he nearly gets killed because Esav's trying to kill him. He sends Eliphaz to kill him. And again, Eliphaz catches up with him. And Eliphaz really doesn't want to kill Yaakov because he knew that Yaakov was righteous. But on the other hand, his father told him that he had to kill him. And Yaakov convinces him that if you take all my money and I'll be a poor person, and a poor person's like a dead person, you could tell your father you killed me. And therefore, so he comes in, nearly gets killed. He loses all his money. He has to go to Laban. He comes to Laban as a poor man. And he has to now deal, in this week's Parsha, everything with Laban. As we're all very familiar with all the events over the trickery of Laban, that he works 7 years for Rachel and then gets switched with Leah, and all the trickery that Laban does, it makes his life really miserable during all these 20 years. And then when he, next week's Parsha, as he has to meet Esav, he has all the challenges of having to deal with Esav, all the challenges of fighting with the Malach, and then even after that he has the challenges of Dina, who was captured from in Shechem. It's one miserable story after another, all because he listened to his mother. All because he listened to his mother. If we just stayed at home, everything would have been fine. So why does Yaakov suffer so much by listening to his mother? Also, it's interesting why Yaakov has to end up marrying really more than two wives. He ends up marrying four wives. Why is he ending up marrying two wives? Why is this whole trickiness that happens with him, obviously Hashem intends this to happen, why is it that he has to have two wives? Not like Avram, who has one primary wife, Sarah, and since Sarah can't have any children, so he takes Hagar. So really, Avram really had one wife. And not like his father Yitzchak has one wife. Why does Yaakov have to end up getting two principal wives? It also seems unusual that Yaakov seemingly always gets outsmarted by Laban time and time again, except at the very end when he's able to get a lot of wealth. Again, it seems that Yaakov is sort of passively being the victim over here. What's behind all this? Also, we see that Yaakov is the only patriarch who has two names, Yaakov and Yisrael, as we will see as we go through the story. Avram had one name and Hashem amended the one name. Yitzchak had one name. Yet Yaakov has two names clearly, even though he was first called Yaakov and then the Malach, and Hashem in next week's Parsha changed his name to Yisrael, but he maintains both names. So why does he have two names? And again, one of the bigger questions is the Chazal tell us that Yaakov is called the Bechir HaAvos, the choicest of the three patriarchs. He is the top of the three. His face, his name is engraved in the Merkava in Shemayim. So he's really a very, very big person over here. But if you look at the storyline of his life from when he leaves home, He doesn't seem to have such a very spiritual life. He doesn't have such a spiritual life. He doesn't appear to be like Avram, who is taking on the world, declaring God's unity in the world, doing chesed throughout the world. Doesn't seem to carry a lot of Yitzchak's piety of prayer and all the mesiras nefesh for Hashem, to be willing to be sacrificed at the Akedas Yitzchak. Yaakov, it just describes very normal behavior. He works for a living, gets married, has shown a lot of talk about that. A lot of talk about his parnasa, a lot of talk about getting married, a lot of talk about his children, a lot of talk about him being clever in his business dealings, his running away from Laban, his preparing to deal with Esav, dealing with the capture of Dinah. Where do you see the great spiritual greatness of Yaakov, that he's the choicest of all the patriarchs? So these are an opening 9 questions to start us off, to get us moving over here. And the obvious answer is, as this has been the theme for all these classes, is that Yaakov's mission, just as Avram's mission was to develop the quality of chesed, and Yitzchak was to develop the quality of gevura, Yaakov's mission is to develop the next sphera of Tiferes. And Tiferes, for right now, for this week, we will... Yeah, question?
Yeah, well, what's the meaning of Tiferes?
Okay, Tiferes literally means beauty. From the word pe'er. Beauty. Something that's beautiful. So, and what it is, as we will see, is a harmonious blend of chesed and gvura. So, this will answer all the questions and will help us begin to understand what Tiferes is on a simple level this week. Next week, we're going to really get into a much more complexity of it, but we're just going to take things very slow. I don't want to rush everything all in one week over here. So let's start and just see a few ideas to show us this, that tells us that this was going on. Number one, our first introduction to Yaakov, he's an ishtam, a wholesome person. Yoshev Ohalim, dwelling in tents. And Rashi says, whose tents is he dwelling in? The tents of shame and the tents of aver. He's in two tents. And we'll see more next week. We'll talk more about this as well. And it seems that, what did he learn in the two tents? There's a lot that he learned. But by studying there, he has something to do with him being the choice of the patriarchs. Exactly what he's studying in the tents, we will see. We'll see what's going to happen. But let's look at his name, Yaakov. Yaakov is a combination of the letter of Yud, which we said on Shabbos means to be a Yid, but really Yud is the smallest letter, and therefore it's the most spiritual letter. It's the beginning of Hashem's name, Yud Hei Vav Hei. Also spells the letter Akev, which is heel, the lowest part of a person. It's got on the one hand the highest letter, and Akev the lowest letter. So what is this all talking about here? So this is a very big topic over here. If we look at all the actions that we have to do in the course of a day, in the course of our life, all actions that we have, the rabbis tell us, are divided into 3 categories. One are things that we have to do. We have a chiv to do, mitzvahs, so to speak. You don't have a choice, you have to do these things. There's another category of things you're not allowed to do. And then the third is what we call the area of rishus. Rishus, which is neither a commandment, neither is forbidden. They're optional. They're optional. You don't have to do it. Really, most things in life, if you have to do a percentage, how many things are mitzvahs, how many things are averos, and how many things are optional? The vast majority of our activities are optional. Optional. I'm sorry?
Free will.
Not just free will, but optional. For example, how many mitzvahs did you have to do today? And how much time did it take? If you're a man, you have a little bit more obligations. You have to pray 3 times a day. Women are excused to a certain degree.
Ma'am, mitzvot.
I'm sorry?
You have to do ma'am mitzvot, minimum.
Well, yeah, I'm saying, but I had to daven shachris today. Took an hour. Mincha took 15 minutes. Marvel take 15 minutes. Man has to learn Torah. Okay, if you're going to learn an hour in the day, an hour at night. Okay, make brachas on food before you eat them. Okay, certain mitzvahs come along your way. You spend a few minutes on the mitzvahs. But it's really not, it doesn't take up most of your day. It takes up a couple hours of your day, maybe 3 hours of your day. Okay, things you're not allowed to do, they don't take up any time. You just can't do them. Can't eat treif, can't steal, can't talk lashon hara. That doesn't take any time. And it's not supposed to do it. So really, most of our time is in this area of rishus. Such as, do you have to go work? You don't have to work. You don't want to eat, you don't have to work. How many hours you have to work? There's no mitzvah that says you have to work 40 hours a week. Right? Other areas in terms of, you have a family, you have to take care of the family and things like that. Those are all optional things per se. So there's a lot of time in that area. So let's see. So just like we have three parts of the areas of activities or categories, so the three patriarchs fit into that. So we know the basis of all positive mitzvahs is loving Hashem. You know, mitzvahs to love Hashem. So since Avram is the father of Chesed, and Chesed, kindness, goes together with love, so Avram is the basis for us to do all the positive mitzvahs comes from what we get from Avram. On the other hand, doing Averis is something you have to stay away from, so the basis of that comes from Yitzchak. So what about this other realm? So this other realm, we shall see, is going to be Yaakov's realm. The area of Rishus. That's where Yaakov is going to be our guide in this. Which is no coincidence that we also see in this week's Parsha, when it says, Vayivka b'makomahu, that Yaakov instituted the evening prayer. Which also, in Halacha, is Rishus, is optional. Shachris and Mincha, you must do. And it originally, Mariv was a rishus. It was optional. You didn't have to daven Mariv. Okay, later, since all Jews did it, so the custom to do it became obligatory. But initially was rishus. Really was something that was optional. So you even see that the prayer like that deals with that. Okay. Now, this is going to be a very big topic. This idea of rishus. Why? So let's go back and answer the first question. What is the big deal of Yaakov holding on to the heel of Esav? Esav represents the Yetzer Hara. He represents the Yetzer Hara, the desire to do evil. And how does the Yetzer Hara work? It works in one of two ways. If you're not a spiritually strong person, all the Yetzer Hara has to do is to try to find a way to do you to get you to sin. That's it. And he does quite well with many people, just getting them to sin, and he's got them in trouble. But there's others, like us, let's hope, that really we don't really want to do so many averis. It's not so gishmak to do averis. Not too many of us in the room really talk a lot of Lashon Hara, or if we do, it's maybe by accident. We don't have such a taiva to talk Lashon Hara. I don't think anybody in this room wants to eat treif. I don't think any of us, intentionally don't want to do mitzvahs or really want to do an Aveira. So the Yetzer is a lot of trouble getting to people like us. But the Yetzer is very clever. He's very clever. He's the only worker that's never unemployed. He can't collect, UI. He's always employed. Even with us. Okay, but the question is, but if he can't get us to do Averos, so how does he deal with us? And the answer is, I just have fixing up my typos as we go along. He grabs us in the area of that which is permitted. This is where he takes us down. And we shall see the word Yaakov, Akev, can also stand for the three letters, Ayin Kufes, if you reorganize the letters, Kadesh atzmecha b'mutalach. Sanctify yourself by that which is permitted to you. That's the positive concept. Why? Because the Yetzer Hara is going to take us down, not by sinning, but by luxuriating in that which is permitted. And Reb Mendel of Vitebsk is quoted as saying that every physical pleasure, even when it's permitted, when a Jew does it for the absolute desire to have pleasure, he uses a term that translates into English is a disgruntled separator of the powerful one. What does that little clause mean? So Nesiva Shalom explains the following. He says, the main avod of a Jew, we know, we're here for dveikus Hashem, to cling to Hashem. That's our job. That's everything about Torah mitzvahs, the whole Judaism, to cling to Hashem. Esav, which is represents that Yetzer Hara, and when we call the klipa meaning the false representation. Remember, the word klipa is just like a shell. So imagine you have a banana that all you have is a peel. But on the outside, it looks like it's a whole banana. Then when you peel it, there's nothing inside. So Esav has this shell, as it were. His goal is to separate the powerful one, us, to separate the Jew that we should not be attached to Hashem. That's his goal. Now, you can do it easily if you get us to sin. That sin, by definition, creates a barrier between us and Hashem. But if he can't find it that way, he's got to find another way that we're not so aware of that we're fault, and that is in the permitted realm. Okay? Now, what does that mean? So, the Chovas HaVavas explains in other places, it's a very important thing. If you want to, just like if a person has two wives, to the degree that you show affection to one wife, to that degree, you're getting in trouble with the other wife. There's no way you can make both wives happy, generally speaking. Right? So, the love of Hashem and the love of the physical pleasures in this world are like two competing wives. The world of spirituality and the world of physicality are like two competing wives. And to the degree that you are engaged with one of those aspects, to that degree, by definition, you're going to be distanced from that. So, if our goal is to cleave to Hashem, and that's a spiritual connection to Hashem, to the degree that a person is engaged in the physical world and really enjoys it, and that's their geschmack, and they get attached to that degree, they cannot be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the trick of the Yetzer Hara. He says, don't do any averos. But boy, I've got some real geschmack, permitted things that I'd like you to look into. I think you really will enjoy it. And the Jew said, oh, the food's kosher and this and that, and the person indulges in that which is permitted. That interaction and that connection to the physical pleasures of the world, by definition, must distance you from Hashem. The two don't work together. Having pleasure for pleasure's sake will take you away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's Esau's main battle plan. That's the Yetzer's main battle plan. And what's so egregious about it is you don't even think you're doing anything wrong when you're doing it. Because after all, it's not an Avera. I know, I can't do this, I have to do this. So what about all the other things? So, you know, what if the Yetzer can get you to love money? So if he gets you to love money, you're going to spend a lot of time trying to make money, buying things that give you a lot of pleasure. And by definition, when you're focused so much on the physical pleasures of the world, you cannot be focused on cleaving to Hashem. That's a spiritual entity. So this is a very, very dangerous ploy of the Yetzer Hara. Very dangerous ploy of Esav. And this is what Yaakov is engaging in battle with. This is as he's holding on to this heel, and we'll see how the heel, that heel again, which stands for Kadesh Atzmecha B'Mutalach, and that is quote-unquote the lowest part of the person, which, you know, symbolically is the least spiritual part of the person, the bottom of the person is the least spiritual. It's in that area that he has to engage his battle with Esav. Now, so one could say like this, okay, so I see, okay, thank you for pointing out to me, Rabbi. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to avoid all the pleasures of the world. It's a minefield. So I'm going to develop an ascetic lifestyle. I'll be like the monks. I'll go to a monastery. And therefore, I'll live a world without any of these pleasures. And therefore, I won't get into trouble. That is a solution. But is it the best solution? So says the Mesillas Yesharim, a very, very Yesodius sticky Mesillas Yesharim, where he discusses two terms. He disturbs the term Tohor and Kadosh. Tohor means pure, Kadosh means holy. A lot of people aren't clear what's the difference. They're both very religious terms. Which one is the better term?
Kadosh.
So let's see what he says. He says, Tira ata hefrei shebein ha-Torah la-Kodesh. Let's see the difference between a Tohor, a pure person, and a Kadosh, and a holy person. Ha-Tohor, the pure person, ma'asav ha-Chomrim, when he does engage in any physical action, einam lo ela ha-Chrechim, he only does them out of necessity. In other words, when he has to eat, and he's hungry, so he has to eat. All right, so pas b'melech tochel, bread and water, a little salt, u'mayim b'mesura tochel, tishteh. Okay, I have to eat, I'll have a piece of dry bread, a little water, a little salt, I'll take a couple of vitamins, and that's it. And I'll wait another 7-8 hours, and if I have to eat something else, I'll eat the same thing. Whatever I have to, I will, and that's it. And even then, and he's only has in mind because he has to have it. Okay. V'nimtza shal yedeze, and if you do that, yotzi misug harasha b'chamrius v'nisharim tari, you stay away from any side. Whoop. Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, from any physicality, and you remain pure. That's how you become pure. But you haven't entered into the world of Kedusha. Because if it would be possible for you not to engage at all in this world, you'd feel it's even better. Halavai wouldn't have to be hungry. Halavai wouldn't eat anything. That is a Tohar, which is a wonderful level. Achakadosh, but the person's a Kadosh. Hadovek tomid lelokov, who constantly cleaves to his God, v'nafsho misaleches ben amuskolos hamitios, and his soul follows the true intellect. And now, very important point here: be'ahavas boro v'yiroso, with the love of his Creator and the fear of his Creator. Very important point. Yeah.
So if person is pure, then He is like a computer. He will not make any error. So where are his tests then?
Well, the test was that he chose to live a life not to be tested, which is fine. You could choose that I don't want to be tested. That was the test, right? You could choose I don't want to be tested. There's nothing wrong with that. But the critical thing I've highlighted here: the Kaddish person, he's guided by a true intellect, based on his love and fear of Hashem. Someone like that, for such a person, it's like he's walking with Hashem in the land of the living, meaning Olam Haba, while he's still in this world. If a person is really connected to God and has got a smart brain, he's dictated by godly rule, and he loves and he fears God, then it's like he's in Shemayim, he's in Olam Haba, while he's down over here. Now, one last point. Val derech zeh, and when you go in that way, kol tashmish yishtamshu b'divar olam, anything that he engages with in this world, achar heyosin kvar dvukim l'kedushas baruch, since he's already connected to Hashem, He now elevates the very thing that he's engaged with. That physical thing has merited to be something in enhancing the use of the tzaddik. It becomes a tool in the hands of a tzaddik. And guess what source the Mesil Sherm uses? From our parsha. That's what the Medrash says when Yaakov took the stones to put around his head. And they bring down Amar Rabbi Yochanan Melamed Shniskab Sukulam. They all gather together. They all said, "Let the tzaddik put his head on top of me." So what Mesil Sherm is saying, the difference between a kadosh and a tohor is, a tohor is a person who really does not want to do any averos. He's staying away from everything. He will never be tempted by it, and he'll remain pure. The kadosh person, on the other hand, as much as he is intellectually separated from running after the pleasures, but since he's so connected to Hashem, he can, as they say, go into the lion's den of luxury and take it and use it exactly the way Hashem wants him to use it. As in other places, it's like just like when you take an animal and bring it as a korban on a mizbeach, where clearly you're not benefiting from it. Let's say a korban olah, you take an animal. He says, if a tzaddik, for example, eats a meal just for the sake of Hashem, it's like he's bringing a korban. And that's really the higher level, because that's what Hashem. Hashem didn't send us to this world to stay away from the world. He sent us in this world to enhance and elevate the world itself, that everything in the world should be used in the service of Hashem. So therefore, what's the message of the stones of the place? That's the point. So you see that the stones themselves want to be involved in the service of Hashem. That's what the message of that medrash is saying. The person who's able to take the world and not look at the world as a very scary, tempting place that's here to take you down. So what do you do with that world? You go right into that world and you're not afraid of this. Now, let's just one more point from the Siva Shalom. And then we're going to say this all fits in with Yaakov over here and his Mid of Tiferes. He says, so it comes out like this. Tahara is the avoidance of evil and tumah, staying away. Kedusha turns everything that is mundane into a holy service of Hashem. Now, here's the key. You cannot achieve Kedusha from love alone or fear alone. I should really bold that. That's a very important line. Okay? What does that mean? He doesn't explain it, so I have to explain it. Okay, if you fear Hashem, if a lot of fear Hashem, so what are you going to say? I don't want to sin. Better, I'm not going to have the roast on Shabbos. No roast for me on Shabbos, because that's a lot of pleasure there, and I don't want to be tempted by it. No, not for me. Okay, it's Shabbos, you have to have a little bit more food. I'll have some very bland chicken. You know, since you got to have a little meat on Shabbos, you have to have a little meat on Shabbos. Now, make sure it doesn't taste that good either. Right? Now, that person has got a lot of fear, but he doesn't have a lot of Kedusha. Because he's just so afraid of doing something wrong, he doesn't want to get involved. So that person will remain a Tohar. Remain a Tohar. He can't be a Kaddish because he only has the fear. Now the guy who has this love of a Kaddish Baruch Hu without the fear, that's the one who could really get himself into big trouble. He loves Hashem a lot. So Hashem said, there's a whole world out there, let me go after it. But he doesn't have enough fear. So what happens is the world swallows him up. The person who loves Hashem, you have a lot of good intentions. But the person who merely has love of Hashem gets himself in the biggest trouble with all those good intentions. Because there isn't the ability of, remember as we've said, that chesed and love, it's expansiveness. But But once you're expanding, it's hard to control the expanding.
What is strength?
And then you get and you go expanding in areas you shouldn't be expanding into. So the person trying for Kedusha, he ain't going to get any close to Kedusha. He's more likely to fall into the trap of Esav. The person who is the person of Gvura, of control, self-control, he says, well, I could live without it. He lives without it, and he remains a Tor. He's never a Kaddish. And therefore, so much of this world that God intended to be elevated just isn't elevated because the person's afraid to deal with it. The person who's the big lover of God and the person who's the chesed person, the expansive person, what generally happens, he gets caught and captivated by the physical world and he ends up doing a lot of averus. So he says, you can only achieve this level through tiferes. That's tiferes, the combination of love and fear. You have both of them in your arsenal. And he says there's a type of fear that is a result of love. From the great love that one has for Hashem, he is afraid to transgress the will of Hashem and blemish the love. Through the two midos of love and fear combined, a Jew is able to stand up to all circumstances. And therefore, you end up that a person looks at this world is filled with things where you can acquire Hashem. Meaning to say, there's so many opportunities to connect to Hashem. You could see everything in this world as another way to connect to Hashem, and another way to connect to Hashem. Through any physical pleasure in the world. Now, obviously, you will have to draw lines, because if you're constantly busy, you know, getting yourself filled with all the physical pleasures of this world, it's highly unlikely you're not going to fall into some traps. But if you got the right, remember these words are very critical words he says over here. Mesilsa Sharm, when he said that you're going with a true intellect, with love and fear of the Creator, you'll be able to handle this. You'll be able to handle all these physical things in life. So now, we now answer the ninth question. We asked in the ninth question, it doesn't look that Yaakov is a very holy person, because all he is engaged in the physical world. And the answer is, that's precisely the point. Yaakov is the Bechir Ha'avos. Why is he the choice? Because he could take everything in the mundane world and lift it up by his interacting with it in service to Hashem. And Yaakov was able to succeed and take every physical aspect, and that's why the Torah B'davka does not talk a lot about his spiritual talents. The Torah could have talked a lot about his learning. It doesn't. It just gives you one line about his prayer. Very little. One prayer. But a lot of coverage about simple, mundane activities. Right? Because to show you that he was able to perfect that area of life. And that's the area we spend most of our time in life. That makes him the choice. Avram championed Chesed. Yeah. Yitzchak championed Gvura. And as we learned last Shabbos, that if you only have Chesed, you have Gvura, you can be tested. And therefore, sometimes a person of Chesed has to dip into fear so he doesn't fall on occasion when he needs to. And the person who's dealing with fear sometimes has to dip into love so he doesn't fall. But the person that's got this beautiful balance like Yaakov has, he can do everything in this world and not be afraid. Not be afraid at all. And that is the goal of why God created the world. That we should all be able to interact with every aspect of this world, the permitted world. And instead of the permitted world sucking us away from Hashem, we're sucking it into Hashem. That's precisely what Yaakov's about. So in a different place, the Nesiv HaShalom goes further. And he says, this is what the whole dream's about. Let's think about what he did. He was spending the first 63 years of his life just sitting and learning Torah. That's all he did. 63 years of his life sitting and learning Torah. Okay? Then he takes the brachos. Then he has to run away from home and has to spend in hiding another 14 years in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever. 77 years studying Torah. Okay. And at that point, he never considered enjoying the physical world. That wasn't on his radar. He just was away from that. He was away from that world. Now he has to go to Haran. That's the birthplace of where Avram used to live. Haran stands for the word Haron, which is anger. Haran was a very, very physical place. Very anti-religious place. Okay? And now he has to go to that place. And on the way there, he has the vision of the ladder. Okay. So what was this all about? So there's an interesting medrash that talked about how he was going to where he was going through, and he wanted to travel on, he wanted to get by, but you know, the place, the way the medrash talks about where he ended up sleeping was like a solid wall blocking him. So what does the medrash mean? Well, the medrash is really describing Yaakov's fear of having to jump into the world of Rishus and to bring Kedusha into the world of Rishus. Okay, because he was a world of Torah. He was a world of being with Hashem and staying away from all the physical things. Now he is frightened like crazy. He has to go to a place where it's the exact opposite of everything he knows about. Okay, so now it's like a wall. He figures, I don't know how I'm going to succeed. Imagine a guy who's in Kollel his whole life. He's just studying Torah Yom V'Layla, and all of a sudden he is no longer has no support. He has to go into the business world. He doesn't know what to do, and he knows all the crookedness that's there. How am I going to be able to be there? How am I going to be able to hold on to my levels? So what does Hashem do? This is now, Hashem is addressing that fear that he has. And he shows him the dream of the ladder. And what he is saying is that the world you are entering now, everything in the world of Rishus is like a ladder. The ladder is planted firmly in the ground, and it reaches the heavens. So although you look at the world of Rishus, and it clearly looks like the earth, which is so far away from spirituality, and that's the world that Esav understands this world is, and Yaakov's smart enough to know it's a world to stay away from. And Yaakov would very much rather be a Tohor type of person. And Hashem is Megalatim. He reveals to him that this world of Rishus, and through that world of Rishus, that's how you could be the holiest person. And that was a paradigm shift for Yaakov. A really paradigm shift. Even Avram, who was the man of Chesed, still didn't hang around in bad places. He always, except when he had to go to Egypt temporarily, he always stuck by himself. Okay, he saw a lot of people, but he invited them into his house. My house is a holy house. My house is a special house. I can do chesed with other people. I'm not having to struggle to make a living, so to speak. I don't have to deal with wicked people. That was good for Avram. Yitzchak says, I have nothing to do with the whole world. Basically. So now Yaakov's saying, I was very happy sitting and learning. So, but what Hashem is saying, but you know, there's still a lot more that you don't know about life. And if you want to succeed, you got to make sure to keep your head in the heavens while your feet are on the ground. Your feet are on the ground. You're getting into all kinds of filth. But keep your head on the heavens. The angels going up and down, up and down. You can create all kinds of angels. That which is down here, you can bring up. And that which is up there, you can bring down. And after the dream, what has Yaakov said? 36. Truly, there is godliness in this place. And I didn't know. What does that mean? He says, I thought you only could find Kedusha in a shul, in a base medrash, a shem ve'ever, far away from the physical world. And now as I'm entering Haran, he says, there's even Hashem in this place too. And I didn't know that. It's interesting, the gematria of the word sulam is 136. Same gematria as the word mamon, money. Is 136. And money, we know, is probably the most physical thing in the world. And Hashem's saying that even the money can act as a sulam. You could be involved with money, that money can corrupt so terribly, and you could use money for the most amazing mitzvahs. Save people's lives. Unbelievable things. You could be filled. There are a lot of Hasidic rebbes that tens of millions of dollars went through their fingers, and they didn't enjoy a penny of it. And they could have abused that power and could have done so much to make their lives better. But they knew that was that money was the ladder. To look at money as a ladder, money is something that can bring Hashem more into the world, as opposed to taking Hashem. You know that is Lamaisa. It says in God we trust. Right now, there's two ways of looking at that. You could say the money is your God. Or in God we trust, and therefore use the money the way God tells us to use the money. So it's two pshatim in God we trust. Right? One is Esav's pshat, and one is Yaakov's pshat. So now, right after he gets this message, very interesting wording, Vayisa Yaakov Raglov. One of these interesting lines, and Yaakov lifted his feet. Vayelach Artsa B'nei Kedem, and then went to the land of the east. What does it mean? He got the lesson so well that even the feet, which is the lowest part, he was able to what? To take it and lift up his feet. Lift up the lowest part of himself. And now he says he understands how this is. So now what's the first thing he does? He sees the well. He now comes, sees a well. And it was sealed by the weight of a stone, which is symbolic of the Yetzer Hara. As we spoke about on Shabbos, how the well is how you can dig deep and find out who you are. But he put a stone on top, it blocks it. And it says there were three flocks waiting. So says the Nesiv HaShalom, that's the three divisions of human activity. Mitzvahs, to do, averus, to stay away from, and rishus. And they would have to all get together to remove the stone, which is an interesting side point he mentions. You know, it's very hard ourselves to tame the Yetzer Hara unless you do this together with a chevra. It's very hard to do this by yourself, to be able to tame that Yetzer Hara. So you got to get a chevra, wait till we all can get together. And that's why the mitzvah of Kedusha, the Torah says, Kedoshim Tiyu, is for all of Klal Yisrael, not just for one person. It's very hard for one person to be a Kaddush. If you have a lot of people, you can be a Kaddush together. But fine, that's a side point. But now let's see what's happening over here. So again, back to Avram is representing Gvura. That's the right hand. Yitzchak is the Midah of, I'm sorry, Avram is Chesed, that's the right hand. Gvura is Yitzchak's Midah, that's the left hand. And Tiferes is Yaakov, that's the torso, that's the middle of the two extremes, which is really the heart, which we'll talk about later more. So now, we can see how this is going to evolve. Yaakov, to get to Tiferes, he first has to develop Chesed, which he learns from his grandfather Avram. And then Gvura, that he learned from his father Yitzchak. And then he can attempt to develop Tiferes. Okay, so now let's spend a little time proving how he develops these. And this will answer all the other questions that we have over here. Okay, examples of Chesed. Well, first example is he studies Torah. He studies Torah for the first 77 years of his life. Now, how would you define that? In terms of what midah is there. So it's interesting, the first Mishnah in Peah, and you said, you don't say this exactly, you say a brice that's similar. Elu devarim she'ein lem shir. These are things that have no limitation. Apeah, bikurim, varayin, ugamilas chasadim. Various mitzvahs, leaving a corner of the Peah, bringing bikurim, visiting the base of Migdash Yontav, acts of kindness, vitalmatur. And then Elu Dvarim Sharam Ochel Perasem Baloma Zeva Ken Kemasol Maba. And these are the things that you eat the fruits of the mitzvah in this world, but the primary principle is for the world to come. In other words, you can enjoy the fruits of your mitzvahs here, and the main thing doesn't get touched. The principles in the world to come. Kibud Avim, Gemilas Chasadim, which includes a number of things. V'havo shalom bein adam l'chaver, bringing peace between people. V'talmud Torah keneged kulam. Talmud Torah is equal to all of them. So the Rambam, in his commentary, wants to understand what's the common denominator between kibud avim, gemilus chasadim, havah shalom ben chaver, and talmud Torah keneged kulam. What's the common denominator between all four? What do you think? So he tells us the common denominator is that they all are doing good things to other people. What does that mean? Well, when you do a chesed with another person, what's going to happen? When you do a lot of chesed with a lot of people, and you're not intending to get anything in return, but what is going to happen? People don't like you. No?
Of course.
People gonna want to be nice to you. They'll invite you to their simchas. They're gonna want to do you favors. You're not even looking for it. You will change people by being kind to them, and that's included in honoring your parents and all the acts of gemilas and bringing peace between people. So if that's a common denominator, because you're doing so much good for others, so how much more so is Torah? Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. So if the common denominator of helping other people is these, and Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, on the simplest level, the Rambam says, because without Talmud Torah, you really don't understand how to do these nice acts of kindness. So therefore, it's something that you enjoy in this world. And as we've said many times from the Chafetz Chaim, who mentioned that the fact that we study Torah brings good energy into the world. Remember I told you the famous story of the Chafetz Chaim when they were in Rad, they were going to build a hospital, and they were made a parlor meeting, and they were seeing who would donate how much money for various beds. And this wealthy guy said, I'll donate 5 beds, and this guy, I'll donate 10 beds, and this. Then a smart aleck turned to the Chafetz Chaim and says, "New Rebbe, how many beds is the yeshiva going to donate?" And he knew they couldn't. So he's kind of insulting the Chafetz Chaim. Says, you can't even do anything to make everything better. Chafetz Chaim said, you should know, the fact that we're learning turn rodin means you'll need less beds. Okay. There'll be less sick people.
Wow.
People benefit from Talmud Torah. Mm-hmm. So Talmud Torah, it itself, by definition, is the source of all chesed. So that's what he's engaged with. Learning Torah is a big chesed. Rav Chaim Voloshin says if there would not be a minute in the time of the world where there is no Torah being learned, the world would be destroyed. You bring the best good energy in the world by studying Torah. So that's a big chesed. So you shouldn't think that people sitting in Kollel don't do chesed. They're learning Torah, it's a big chesed. But there's other acts of chesed. Even with Esav, if you recall when Esav, the day when he was 15... And the Medrash tells us how Esav got himself in all kinds of trouble when he was in the same field as Nimrod. And Nimrod, the wicked Nimrod, saw Esav hunting in his field. He says, you're not supposed to hunt in my field. And Esav gets in a big argument with him. And Nimrod said, we'll see you tomorrow. We'll have a fight to the death. And Esav comes to Yaakov and says, I got a big problem. I have to fight with Nimrod. So Yaakov could say, oh, good. Go get killed. What do I care? But what does he do? He gives him good advice. He says, listen, that Nimrod, he's only strong because he has a special coat on. That was a special coat that Adam HaRishon had. And when you got that on, you're invincible. Find a way to get him to take the coat off before you have the battle, then you'll kill him. Tell him when you... So, when they fought the battle, before they fought, Abe said, what a shame, your nice coat's going to get all dirty. I'm going to punch you in the nose. I'm going to hit you. It's going to be blood all over your coat. What a shame, I'm going to rip up your coat. So he said, okay, I guess I'll take off my coat. Took off his coat, Esav was able to kill him. And that's the coat the Big Dei Chamuda said he had. So he gave Esav good advice, he did chesed with him. Clearly Rivka, who represented the meat of chesed, as we saw from Parshas Chayesara, and who loved Yaakov, obviously she loved him because she felt she had a great connection to Yaakov. So he must have had that same midah that his mother had. The Torah didn't have to tell us that he's cooking lentil soup for... Why is he cooking lentil soup for his father? Because his father's sitting Shiva. He's doing the mitzvah of comforting mourners, which is chesed. Clearly, listening to his mother to take the blessings from Yitzchak, even from Esav, good thing. Really, the blessings from Yitzchak, but okay, from Esav would be clearer. So he didn't want to do that, but he listened to his mother. His parents told him to go to Charan. It's all kibud avim, which is all included in a chesed. And after he has the dream, What's one of the things he says? And if you make me successful, Shem, I will give a tenth of all my money that I make to tzedakah. And then when he comes to Haran, people are perfect strangers to him. What does he do? He just walks over and takes the rock off. No one asked him. And then he gives to drink Rivka's flocks. So you see, he's a big chesed guy. The first 77 years of his life were basically chesed. Chesed. But he would not want to touch any rishos because it was scary to him. Want to stay very far away from that world of rishos. Okay, now, next step. Yaakov must develop gvura. Why? Well, according to the original plan, it's his own class and it's right, that Yitzchak had two sons, Yaakov and Esav. What was supposed to happen is that Yaakov would further develop chesed and Esav would develop gvura. And the two of them together would work as a team. Well, the problem is that Esav chose not to develop that midah. So now we have a problem. We have only Yaakov who's capable of chesed. And where's going to be the combining of chesed and gvura? That's supposed to be the next step of the progression. We had chesed from Avram, one person. Gvura from Yitzchak, one person. So what's the next generation? Put the two forces together. Now that's a big, big load. So you give one to one son, one to the other. You work b'shutfus. Mm-hmm. You work together and get the job done. Originally, Yaakov was supposed to have six sons and Esav was supposed to have six sons. Six would have the qualities of Esav and six would have the qualities of Yaakov. But the problem, as we saw in last week's parsha, Esav didn't live up to that. Now, Hashem knows it's not possible for us to move forward if we're only going to have one person with chesed. We're regressing. We've got to continue forward. Well, Yitzchak, as we said, always hoped that Esav would come around. Always hoped that he would come around. And eventually they'd work as a team. Rivka, a little smarter, wasn't informed of the wickedness of Esav, that terrible. And she knew this isn't going to happen. So her wisdom says there's going to have to be something remarkable here. That Yaakov is going to have to add on a second layer. Put on another hat. And he has to put on the hat of Gvura, which is not his style at all. So now what has to happen? Just like what happened to Yitzchak. In order to develop Gvura, Yaakov must be put into situations that require Gvura, and he gets on-the-job training. You see? And now Hashem has to give Yaakov the environment and the tools necessary to succeed. You see, Avram blazed the path of chesed. So now he could bequeath that to Yaakov. Yaakov didn't have to work so hard to make chesed. And he wasn't meant to work so hard to make chesed. Yitzchak worked hard to develop Gvura. And he was meant to give that over to Esav. And he shouldn't have had to work that hard for that, but it seemed he had to work hard and he failed. So now instead of two people together combining Gvura and chesed, it comes out that Hashem says it's going to be one person putting the two together. But you can't put the two together unless you develop each one on its own. So chesed was developed. Now we got to do gvura. And as you recall, we mentioned last week, what's the real gvura? Self-control. But self-control in a way that's so perfected that you'll be eventually be able to control others and they don't even know you're controlling them. Remember, that was the yesod we said last week. So now they got this yesod. And all the Torah we said last week, that to be a gibor, there's physical strength and spiritual strength. Remember, we talked, it's just a little bit of chazor just on this point. So now, what's the examples of gvura? Well, first of all, he controls his own nature by masquerading as Esav in order to get the blessings. That had to take a lot of gvura, because Yaakov, he's not used to impersonating, but Yaakov doesn't do things that aren't true. The last thing he could try to do is imitate Esav. That really would be, as we would call, an impossible task.
Against his nature.
Because I don't even know how to talk like Esav. I didn't even know how to do shtick like Esav. And now going in to see his father was sure defeat. He himself said, what if my father feels me? And I'll be kimsatea, like a mocker. And he'll curse me. Now Yaakov wasn't just a worry wart. He knew it's not going to work. Ima, he's going to catch me. It's just I'm not a shtickmacher. And I'm not Esav. Good, wonderful. You're going to put some furs around me and this and that. And you see that Yitzchak was very not sure who was there. And it was that close to Yaakov blowing his cover. But what did we say? A gibor? What did we say last week? A gibor will go into situations knowing that he may lose. But if that's the Ratzon of Hashem, you go in even if you may lose. So that was the first step of being a gibor. He had to go in knowing he's going to lose, knowing he's going to get cursed, but he has to try his best. And his best, and you know what? Wasn't such a good impersonator. Wasn't so good. Because Yitzchak kept saying, are you sure you're my son? Doesn't feel like my son. Yet Yitzchak still gave him the blessing. You know why? A lot of people ask a question, why did Yitzchak give him a blessing? If he's so unsure, the answer is, that's what Hashem put in his mind. That's what Hashem put in his mind. Hashem can even control our minds. And Yitzchak, who normally would be so sharp you couldn't put a fast one past him, kacha, it happened. Why? Because Yaakov has to get it. He has to get it. So that was lesson number one. You know what? You can be a gibor. And he said, who, me? Just do it. And Rivka, she was a neviah. She knew it had to be. Because she knew Esav was really terrible. And if Yaakov doesn't pick up the slack, it's not going to be. So failure was no option. So that's number one. Okay, now remember, if you want to take, here's the rule. If Hashem puts you in a situation to do the job, that's no way, it's not fair, Hashem doesn't give you the ability to succeed. He can't. And you see Hashem's putting him in this place. Why? Because Esav's not doing the job. Someone's got to do it. Not me. What? No, you're the only one. You got to do it. So what's the Torah telling us? That's why he has to have physical strength. All of a sudden, he didn't go in the gym. We didn't know anything about his physical strength. All he did was make beans. All of a sudden, he's got this incredible strength. Where'd that come from? You know where it came from? Because you have to be a gibor. And just like we said by Moshe Rabbeinu, who really didn't, but it was a miracle. So all of a sudden, after he was emboldened by taking the brachas, he figures, well, you know what? It would be the right thing to do is just uncover the rock. They should get water right away. That's pretty heavy. Might as well try. Boom! He takes it off! Which means, Hashem is saying, you see, Yaakov, I'm going to give you all the strength you need to do this job. Very important to know that if other people aren't doing their jobs and you have to pick up the slack, being qualified is not one of the necessary qualifications. You have to want to do the ruts on Hashem and He will help you. Then, again, the gvura of being able to back off, to control yourself. So when Lavan switches the wives, what does Yaakov do? Just like his father, who when Abimelech took the well away, said, okay. It's also Ratz Hashem. And here's the real trick. The hardest job he had to do was to go into the slime pits of Haran, marry women, raise up a frum family, of Yurei Shemayim, of Torah and Mitzvahs, and come back there to Yisrael with a frum family. Now, you want to tell me that's an impossible task? Anybody here would like to go to a place where there's no Jews, find a shidduch, raise your kids, stay there for 20 years, and come back as frum as you left. Right? And the hardest part is, how is he going to extricate those girls from their home? This is where they lived. How's he going to get? How's he going to get them to want to leave? You know how he did it? He did it by being the gibor with the self control, and just like his father let Esav think he was outsmarting him, and he didn't say anything. He played dumb. Yaakov's strategy was to let Lavan think he's outsmarting him the whole time. And therefore, Lavan constantly did things to hurt Yaakov. But you see, well, Lavan was so involved in wanting to make money, he didn't realize that when he's hurting Yaakov, he's hurting his daughters. And Yaakov keeps letting Lavan win so many times. Till when he has to tell the daughters, you know what? I know it's going to be hard for you, but maybe we got to leave now. I was told by the Malach we have to leave. Look what they answer. Have we still a share in the inheritance of our father's house? Surely he regards us as outsiders, now that he has sold us and has used up our purchase price. Truly all the wealth that God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now then, do just as God has told you. He used love on selfishness and Yaakov's self-control to let love and walk all over him. To be the very rope for Lavan to hang on to get his daughters to run away from him. And where did he learn it from? His father. And that's what he said last week. Toldos Yitzchak is Yaakov and Esav. Ah, you think Yitzchak was wasting his time with Esav all this time? Yaakov was watching the whole time. He knew his father wasn't stupid. How come Abba is being so nice to Esav? Because Yitzchak, Yaakov was watching. He never thought he'd have to do it himself, but he was watching, he saw watched. And that became the tools that he would use himself when he would have to develop that himself. So then finally, he has to deal with Esav. And Esav, that's another no-win scenario. Four, next week's parasha, 400 big generals. He's outnumbered 400 to 12. And then the night before, he has to fight with this Malach. Now, whoever fights against a Malach and wins. And he wins. So the angel says, Vayomer, lo, Yaakov, Yemer, Shimcha, your name is no longer Yaakov, ki Mistro. Why? Ki soriso im Elohim v'manoshim v'tucha. For you have striven with beings divine and human and have prevailed. Who's that? Esav and Lavan. You were able to defeat Esav and Lavan. You are now Yisrael. And Hashem says the same thing to him a little bit later on next week's parsha. You shall no longer be called Yaakov, but Yisrael shall be his name. And his name became Yisrael. So now Hashem is giving Yaakov a second name. Not only one name. It's not replacing it. Because you see, right afterwards, he keeps calling him Yaakov. Goes back and forth, Yaakov Yisrael. He has two names. Yaakov represents Chesed, while Yisrael represents Gvura, control. So the question we ask, does it seems that Yaakov only suffers by listening to his mother? The answer is no. He precisely is going through the growing pains of developing the new midah that did not come to him naturally. So just like we said with Avram and Yitzchak, that there were things in their lives that they weren't counting on happening, but this was the way to develop. The 10 tests of Avram, he didn't plan on that, but that was the way to develop his mind and to make him a real person of Chesed. Yitzchak wasn't planning on having an Esau, but that made him a man of Gvura. So all the things that go through Yaakov's life is exactly what his mother wanted to have happen, because that's the only way he would learn to be a Gibor. At the end of the day, what are we told? When he left the battle of the Malach, it said he was Shalem when he came to Shechem. He was complete. He was complete in his Torah. He was complete in his health. He was complete in his wealth. He had everything. He didn't lose a word of Torah for the 20 years that he was there. He was able to go into Haran and elevate everything from Haran, take everything and use it as a holy thing. Okay, so now we just got to answer, what's he doing with two wives? Now the answer should be very clear. The purpose of marriage is to perfect and balance your midos. Whatever midah you have, God will generally give you a spouse, it's going to be the opposite. Why? To balance it. So you don't go too extreme in that midah. So Avram marries Sarah, why? Because Sarah, she had gvura. She would tell Avram off. She didn't like what he was doing. Throw her out of the house. You listen to me. She was the Gevura, and Avram was the Chesed. Good Shidduch. Yitzchak's the Gevura. He marries Rivka, who we know by her taking care of the camels. She was Chesed. That balances. But Yaakov's got to develop Tiferes. There ain't one wife who can do that. Tiferes itself is two midos. So you need a wife for each midah.
So we need two wives then.
So, yes, not us. We're, no. to develop it. So Yaakov initially wants to marry Rachel because he's the man of kindness. And you see, Rachel opened up a mouth to him. How come you're not praying for me? What's the matter? Why don't you do something? Why don't you do something like your father did? Your grandfather did. Rachel is a shtickle gevura. And that was the soulmate. That was the one who was supposed to be for him. Esav was supposed to marry Leah. Leah was more the chesed one, the temper Esav. And that's the way the shidduchim should have gone. But since Esav messed up, so now Yaakov has to marry both wives.
Never.
It has to, because each one will work on that mita, balance that mita. That's why he has to have both wives for that. Okay? And that is how he's able to succeed. So now that we have this week under our belts, so now we see exactly how he was able to develop this Tiferes, which has, now both midas are equally accessible to him. Avram was chesed, and in a pinch he could bring in some yira. Yitzhak was yira, was gvura, and in a pinch he could bring in a little chesed and a little av. Yaakov masters the two. And that's what we said, and only someone who can master those two can become a kadosh, can take a hold of this world and every step of this world elevate. And all the mundane things he did, he elevated them completely. Now he's ready to move on, and he's ready to deal with his children. Then next week will be the next step, because there's another beautiful thing that happens. It's not just, right now it seems, okay, he's got this amazing chesed here, he's got this amazing gvura, and he uses them together. But we're going to see that really there's one more step. Is that it's not just, yeah, when I have to do a chesed, I have to do gvura, but then the two of them really combine and create a third brand new reality that couldn't exist without the two combining. Just like you have hydrogen and oxygen, together can make water. So chesed and gvura make tiferes, but will make a new chemical reaction spiritually. And that's what we're going to talk about next week.
What about the other two wives? Bilhah and Zilpah.
Okay.